Okay, well, so hello. Welcome to this Pop Gnosis episode of Talk Gnosis. Today we're going to be talking about that Michael Bay Gnostic classic, The Island. I'm Jason Memel, and I'm joined with my co-host, Rebecca Skolnick and Deacon John. If you're new to Gnosticism, the absolute shortest way I can describe it is that it's a kind of deeper knowing, one that you can't learn or be taught, but maybe that you can discover through faith, mystical exploration, or in my favorite way, art. It can be described as remembering a deep connection, something that you didn't know you forgot. A lot of older traditions also have like whole cosmologies of figures and levels of pleroma and like planes of existence that are either trying to keep us from remembering, or at the very least are in the way of remembering, or they're actually trying to help us remember. On Pop Gnosis, we take a look at the culture around us through that same kind of Gnostic lens. Sometimes the connections are direct and easy to see because the art makers are intending it, and sometimes they're lurking just underneath and are completely unintentional and need to be uncovered with some digging. So that's what we're going to do here. And like I said, we're going to talk about The Island, a 2005 film made by Michael Bay, and it's got Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor in it as two clones who, we don't even know that they're clones.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. By the way, there's going to be lots of spoilers. Everybody stop what you're doing. Watch The Island. You'll thank us later.
And it's about clones.
Yeah, it's about clones. Well, yeah, so true. It is a bit of a spoiler. So it is about two characters who are living in this highly structured world that yet somehow has these small little problems with it. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And then they end up discovering that they're inside a entirely constructed world, and that they are clones meant for wealthy people to like fix their organs and that kind of thing. But yeah, I did kind of jump the shark there by immediately letting you know that they're clones. But it is essentially like it's if Michael Bay made The Matrix. It's got a bunch of things about like the world being controlled, but noticing small problems. It's escaping from world to another world. But it's also, because it's Michael Bay, it's got like action scenes and like cameras swiveling around characters as they look despondently at weird landscapes and like, yeah, it's just it's
endless slow-mo, endless amounts. Yeah, endless amounts of slow-mo. Just
exactly. Yeah.
Every shot.
It's also, I would say, way more tongue-in-cheek than The Matrix. It's like I joked that it's like the sponsored Matrix, because like there's like Pepsi, I think, has a spot in it, and like, or no, maybe it's Coke, but anyway, yeah, like
a lot of brands.
I have so many notes about brand, like product placements in this movie. So we'll definitely have to talk about that.
Well, I mean, maybe that's a great place to start. Like, what are some of the branding choices that you noticed?
Okay, so first of all, I have to say that I do agree that this, disclaimer that I loved this movie in high school and I have not seen it since. And so watching it again, I was like, oh, I used to love this movie. And I think it's because Michael Bay's philosophy peaks in high school. Like that's where he ends. Something about it, like I was like, oh yeah, okay, I can see why I liked this then. But it really is kind of like The Matrix, The Giver, The Hunger Games, like every sci-fi philosophy movie kind of rolled into one. Like there are elements of everything. Mm-hmm. So one of those is this futuristic, like it's set in the future and the Earth has gone through this great contamination. So that is why they are told that they're underground. And so then when they come out into the real world, first of all, this was made in 2005. The real world, the future is 2019. And I have to say that watching it in 2023, knowing what happened between knowing what 2019 actually was, and
no
then
kidding.
Like what's happened since 2019 was a mind-boggling experience. But the first thing that really caught my eye was that in 2019, when you come out onto the street, you can have internet access anywhere through MSN. That was MSN was like
MSN search, not even Bing yet.
I know. MSN search was like the futuristic like internet access point, and that cracked me up right off the bat. MSN.
The funniest. Oh, sorry. The funniest thing for me when it comes to product placement, because as B was explaining, right, this idea that there's this worldwide contamination is a lie. They tell the clones to keep them complacent, to keep them in the bunker, to keep them from wanting to get out. So you know they say there's been this huge disaster, right? And we live in a post-apocalyptic world. But there's all this product placement in the bunker. So you know there's a scene where Ewan McGregor is putting on his shoes, and you know he takes out a futuristic drawer of shoes, and they're all Pumas. They're probably drinking Aquavita, and there's just no like it doesn't. If you think about it for 10 seconds, it doesn't make any sense. But it is it's very very funny. I think we're going to say the words The Matrix a lot, which you know is not like the. Which is a very, in some ways, particularly the third one, can be very sophisticated philosophical movies. But at the same time, they're not, you know, they're not the deepest movies in the world. They're still action films, right? And this is definitely like, you know, if the Wachowskis were given lobotomies, right, and told to write a script. But there's no way this movie wouldn't have been made if it hadn't been for The Matrix and its success. And, you know, it's not just that they're drawing on a lot of the same sci-fi tropes, right? There's definitely, like, you know, a little hints of ripoff here and there, especially, like, when they find, like, you know, the clone farm, when our clone heroes discover the clone farm, right? That's very similar to the scene of Neo waking up and all sorts of other parallels. I will tell you this. So I saw this movie in the theaters.
Me too.
I saw it with my girlfriend at the time, who I can't remember why. I do like action films. I do like Michael Bay. I have no idea why we went to go see this. That said, I'm sorry, Laura. I don't think we ever saw any good movies together. I think the other one I remember watching in theaters together was Revenge of the Sith. So I feel like,
yeah, great choices.
I feel like it was just whatever was playing. However, all that said, I made my wife watch it. So time is a flat circle. Bringing it all back together, and we both actually enjoyed it more than we thought that we would. I would actually say that it was better than I remembered. And I would actually rank it as one of the better Michael Bay films, because what the only other good one is The Rock. So there's not a very high bar. That said, enjoyed it more than I thought. You know, is it good? Absolutely not. And I feel like every time I'm going to guest on the show, I'm a fan of short movies. I'm going to be like, this movie is so long, though. It's so long.
Movie is so long. This movie is about a solid half hour longer than it needs to be. And it's totally in the action sequences. I would actually like to see a cut of this movie without some of the action sequences.
I was just about to say that there needs to be a fan edit, right? And particularly because the last half is just a chase scene, you know, and a lot of the action scenes are related to it being a chase scene, and you don't need an hour and a half chase scene.
Okay, I'll make the fan edit. You've convinced me.
And then we will do a live stream and like watch it together.
Do not tempt me.
I am tempting you. This is exactly what I'm doing.
but I would say, compared to like the Transformers movies, like this movie is Citizen Kane. I need something more advanced than a Citizen. This movie is I can't think of anything funny, but it's miles and shoulders and tons ahead. You know, even watching it, you know, I've come not to bury the island, but to praise it. even watching it, you know, I was thinking, because of course there's tons of terrible CGI. Tons of bad green screening, but it's still like I still found it more tactile and thrilling than modern action films, right? Than like a lot of superhero movies, where there at least was some actual stunt people and some actual things in the frame blowing up that weren't just CGI. There actually people falling, things exploding, what have you. My wife also did turn to me at one point and said, "Oh, because you're male, did you get a frill from this? Look, that thing went boom. That thing went boom, and then that thing." Went boom, and I'm like, yeah, kind of.
Well, I do have to say that before, when you brought up the Wachowskis, like, it's like if the Wachowskis weren't trans women, that would be the island.
Yeah.
Because it, but it is like, in some ways, a stunning movie. Like, there are beautiful shots. The coloring is exactly what you would think from sci-fi and Michael Bay. But at the same time, like, the blues are deep. Like, even when all of the clones are in their white suits out on those red rocks, like, there is attention to detail in this movie, and like artistry in this movie, even in some of the tech stuff. That I do really appreciate. So I too am kind of here to praise the island. Even though the one brand that I did not say was MSN and Michelob Light. Michelob Light was like the featured beer of 2019.
You know, there's a, what was I going to say there? Like what you just said there about the Wachowskis and be it, like, I think there's something also interesting, like the Matrix is like, a lot of it is about like transcending yourself, you know, like literally being able to experience a change of self. Whereas what one thing about this movie is that it does feel like it's sort of a recapitulation of self, you know, like that the characters sort of come out of this whole experience even more like sort of masculine and feminine and hero. And if that makes sense, like it doesn't, versus it like, versus the Matrix feeling like it kind of left a question about what these characters could be. Like I had no question about what these characters could be. So there's sort of a, where that takes me is it also goes to something that, John was saying about like, you know, like we've been comparing it to the Matrix and like often being somewhat derogatory in that comparison. I wonder if there's like a, if this is like, in a Gnostic perspective, if this is like it's clearly a Matrix ripoff. Like there was a clear production meeting where they said, how can we do this again? Mm-hmm. You know, this was hot. How can we make it again? But like from a sort of more psychic perspective, like, is this a slightly muddier echo, you know, of these Gnostic ideas, like it's the lens has more dirt on it, if that makes sense, in some cases quite literally.
No, I think you're onto something, because I do think, and that's I think what I meant by Michael Bay's philosophy peaked like at a high school level. Because immediately you are thrown into quite a hero, like a quite an obvious hero's journey. So you have, which I think it's funny you said Echo. So you have Lincoln Six Echo, that is Ewan McGregor's like actual name. And the first, like the opening to the movie is this dream that he's having. So already you're very immersed in like metaphor and symbolism and this visual language of like fragmentation. And immediately Lincoln Six Echo is like this very childlike questioning, you know, person. And then he has the mentor doctor, Sean Bean, RIP in every movie he's ever been in. Sean loves to die. Bean is like the doctor who you're not sure at first if he's like a mentor figure or not. But I feel like there are these, it's a very obvious philosophical story kind of right off the bat. But you're right. I think it is either obvious or like weak in its storytelling in a way that, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's not subtle.
Yeah.
Well, and
my wife right away was like, oh, they're clones. Cause I didn't let her see any spoilers or read the, or watch the trailer. And she was also like, I don't think this island is good. We haven't even explained what the island is, by the way. But maybe Jason, you're about to say something.
We're talking about the synopsis, so everyone just needs to watch the movie.
You just need to watch the movie.
It's interesting you say that too about it being unsubtle. Like there's I've been even talking with friends about that in terms of storytelling. Of like, there's often a desire to be clear in storytelling, but then I think there's actually that instinct can go to the point of being too clear. You know. Making everything so obvious, like this is the hero, this is a bad place. Like, you know, Sean Bean is like, you know, clearly doesn't have his best intentions in mind. Also, I have to say, so Sean Bean is the, like, we, you know, he starts out as this possible good doctor, but then he clearly becomes the demiurge, the guy controlling the artificial world. And then I'm like, but he dies. Is this like a Nietzschean thing? Like, God is dead? Like, Sean Bean / God is dead? You know?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, you know, probably unlike The Matrix, you know, The Matrix is deliberately Gnostic, right? They're sitting down, they're reading Nag Hammadi, they are referring directly to Gnosticism, where, you know, this perhaps, I mean, still, Gnosticism still, like, it's popular with creatives, right? But as you're saying, Jason, they're probably getting it secondhand through The Matrix. But that said, you know, the screenwriters are thinking of their philosophy 101 class, right? Like, like, you know, these themes are deliberate, and then they sort of coagulate into Gnosticism, because obviously, you know, if you do take a philosophy 101, they're going to tell you about Plato's cave, right? Which is a very important allegory for the Gnostics, and they refer to it over and over again. And it's and when people hear Plato's cave, if they know Gnosticism first, or they've seen The Matrix, or what have you, you know, that they're going to make that connection. So obviously they were thinking about Plato's cave when they wrote this. There is some sort of, like, you know, I don't think it's that deep, but they are thinking of some kind of light satire of religion, right? Like the doctor is supposed to be God. They're supposed to be Adam and Eve. I don't think it's a coincidence the first thing that they see when they get out is a snake. Right, the bunker is probably supposed to be Garden of Eden. You know, you combine that with Plato's cave, and you kind of instantly have Gnosticism. So I actually, going back and rewatching it, you know, I found the Gnostic themes and the possibility of mapping some of the characters and events one-to-one to the mythologies to be, you know, stronger than I thought it would be. You know, I thought it would be more of a read-in, but I think it does have these direct influences that allow for a Gnostic reading more than some places where we might be, you know, okay, is this our interpretation? So that's just what I wanted to say from what Jason spurring on. Does this mean the death of the demiurge? Perhaps so.
No, not at all. And I mean, I think it's also... it's possible that maybe the filmmakers found a lost text of Plato's Island.
No, well, they do make blatant religious, like, it, but through the Steve Buscemi character. Yeah. So he says something. So Steve Buscemi plays this he's working on the society, essentially, like keeping it running. And he knows of the outside world, and he's become friends with Ewan McGregor, and he gives him things from the outside world that he's not supposed to, but you know, Lincoln is very curious and keeps coming to him to ask questions about the world. And so, you know, I think he enjoys, like, the conversation, but he knows that it could get him in trouble. So he's kind of playing, and he does end up helping them along the way. But he says something, it's a direct quote that I wrote down. Like, you know, when you talk, like, something about the island or the doctor, it's like when you talk to the sky or whatever, like, God is the guy who ignores you. They do make very blatant, like, anti-religious references throughout. I actually thought the when I finished the movie, I thought ethically they posed a lot of questions that they abandoned. Like, they were like, at the end, all the clones get out, and it's like, okay, but then, like, what happens? They're just loose in the world as, like, they're educated to the level of, like, a 15-year-old, and they all have these crazy fragmented memories, and okay, but they're just, like, out there.
But they're free.
So, but I feel like that's kind of how I feel as an adult as well. I'm like, me, a former baby, can just lease a car? What?
I think it's fun. It's fun for me. So you actually get dopamine hits by making connections, right? So, you know, there's a... a temptation with a show like this, I mean, the entire show that you folks are doing, or doing these topics, where it just turns into, you know, this character represents this in the mythology, right? Or this idea is exactly like this in the mythology. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. I don't think this show does that. But it's kind of fun for the people doing it, but it's not always fun to listen to. And I think it's, at the end of the day, a lesser form of analysis, right? So that's my song and dance, so I can just start doing that. But I did really like connecting to Jason's intro, and be, as you were saying, Lincoln Echo 4 or 5, whatever, Ewan McGregor, the movie actually opens because he has dreams and memories from the man that he's cloned from, which is an accident. It's something that is not supposed to happen. They're not supposed to have the memories of those people that they're cloned from. And of course, that idea is both very Platonic and very Gnostic, right? Just like Jason was saying, is you're recovering something. You're getting these memories back. You are getting this truth back, which has always been there, but has been obscured by these forces and systems and what have you. So again, you know, when it comes to doing the one-to-one, there actually is sort of an accidental sophisticated threshold of Gnosticism there that I think is definitely makes watching this a little bit more fun, because, you know, folks, as I said, I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. But it's a dumb movie. It's not a good movie, it's a smart dumb movie.
It's a smart, you know, and there's also kind of a thought here too. Like I hear what you're saying, John, about not going too far, or not taking the association, the ability to make an association, as a truth. And I don't think that's not what I want to try to do here. I think for me, I think the benefit is more like when you make the association, that it kind of can hopefully lead you to think more about the ideas that are associated to those associations, if that makes sense. Like, what is it to notice that your world is a little off, you know? Mm. What is it to challenge that, you know? And also, like, what is it to like engage with the meanings that are being like handed to you versus the ones you're choosing? Like, I think a lot of that can be fun. It is also just, as you say, it's the part of the whole fun of the show is the dopamine hit of like, what about this and what about this, and also definitely not that, like, you know. But there was something I was going to mention there. But I think, like, yeah, I think there is also, I think the feeling, like, whether or not it's a photocopy of The Matrix, there's also kind of maybe like from a optimistic side for me, that like that these are maybe where the good version of the idea can slip in, you know, in a less subtle, less society challenging text. You know, this might be rebelling against religion, but it's not rebelling against capitalism, you know, or individualism, you know. but it carries sort of carries within it the carrier wave of these maybe more subtle and challenging ideas. Like, that's, I don't know, maybe I'm optimistic, but yeah.
I don't think you are, because what, I'm so glad you said capitalism, because we've talked about how I think it is not representative of 2019. But what I thought was really interesting and stems from, like, I think there's a lot of Gnostic philosophy and theory and conversation around the body and the body's limitations, and whether or not we see the body as like a positive, these are very crude terms, but like a mm-hmm. positive or a negative, if it's, you know, what does the material world mean, especially if made by the demiurge. So I think the conversation of like science or health and technology in this movie is really interesting, especially through a capitalist lens. Like, watching it, I was like, yeah, I feel like rich people would absolutely, if they didn't. So one of the pieces of the cloning is that the company has lied to the clients and said that the clones that they're making are not human. They're not sentient. They don't have thoughts or feelings. You know, like, you're not really doing anything bad. And so one of the problems with Lincoln and Jordan, who is Scarlett Johansson, getting out into the real world, one of the issues is that it's going to blow the company's cover of their clients realizing that they are actually making human beings that they're then killing for organs, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I could totally see that as, like, if we had the technology to clone, I do think people would unfortunately purchase this insurance, especially like in America. I know y'all are Canadians and blessed in this regard, but like in America, the state of our healthcare system is so dire that I absolutely see this as like a potential possibility if science and tech were to move kind of in that area of like consumer marketing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, if you listen to some other Gnostic podcasts, I'll probably tell you that there are underground cloning facilities for the rich, but we're not.
There might be,
or there might at least be like a white paper and like an investment company that's trying to pitch it, you know?
It's like, being talked about in rooms right this minute.
Yeah.
And something else.
Someone's have you seen The Island by Michael Bay, 2005? Yeah.
Something else I did like about the movie too is, which again, sophisticated is perhaps too generous, but I wasn't expecting the first time that I saw it way back in 2005. Is so, you know, they go on the lam, and they're Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson's plans are to find the people that they're cloned from, and you know, blow. You know, once the truth gets out, right? Because as B was explaining, they lie to the people who have bought these clones, right? And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. Well, you know, when they find out that actually we're people, then they're going to help shut this down, right? And Ewan McGregor finds the person that he's cloned from, and he is an absolute prick and doesn't care, right? He wants that liver, and you know, I didn't see that coming.
Too much sex, and he has hepatitis now. Yes. Like I did not remember that. At all.
I feel like that was probably a really fun scene for Ewan McGregor to film, like that, you know.
100%.
Essentially playing himself but jerkier, you know, like, yeah. Well, and there's like, it was interesting you pointed that out too, John, because I was wondering, like, is there a Gnostic myth or a myth period about like finding sort of the higher version of yourself or the realer version of yourself? But then it's inverted here because they're an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if he is an echo of his source, you know, but to have the echo be more ethical, do you know what I mean? Like, what's going on there? Is it because they're childlike and therefore haven't been corrupted by the world? I don't know. Like,
I think that's what the movie's getting at, and that's where we can't quite one-to-one with a lot of Gnostic mythologies, because there is mythology, you know, particularly among the Valentinians, where we actually have a divine double, right, but who is basically a superior version of us, but is us, but it is still in the Pleroma. That's actually something else. If you were going to take a Gnostic interpretation of this movie, where things do get kind of fun, right, because both this and The Matrix do something very smart, which is you have this illusionary world, which in many ways is very pleasant, right? So if you're going to do a one-to-one of Gnosticism, it turns out this pleasant world is a trap, and there's actually a better world out there. That it might be a sacrifice to get to it, but you want to get to it. But in the Matrix, when they get to quote-unquote the real world, it's garbage, right? It's shit compared to the Matrix. And even in this movie, you know, the life that they lead in the bunker, you know, isn't paradisical, but they are, all their needs are taken care of. They are for the most part happy and content. And when you watch this movie again, you know, from 2005 to now, right, if you're paying $3,000 rent for a one-room apartment, you'll be watching this movie and be like, you know, that bunker was a pretty sweet deal. You know, like, this is a pretty good life. So something that's actually pretty advanced is the fact that, you know, the world that Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson escape to is in many ways a better one, but it's not paradise. It's not the Pleroma. It's not heaven. It's our world. It's flawed and it's broken and it's pretty fucked up. And Matrix does that, you know, one above where quote unquote the real world is insanely horrible. And in some ways, I think that this idea of the real, this embrace of the real, is in some ways more sophisticated than some of the Gnostics and Gnostic myths. I don't know why I'm saying sophisticated a lot. It's something that a lot. It's great. It's great philosophical things to think about, right? Which is, you know, and something else that the movie does very well, which I think is part of the Gnostic message, part of the Gnostic myth, which we also find in The Matrix, is the start, the first experience of divine reality, the start to getting to reality, the end of the illusion is not joyful but painful, right? It's unpleasant, you know. It's an inbreaking of something that is horrible, you know, and traumatic, and I think that's something that both movies get very well. Sorry, Jason, I went on a long rant. I wanted to answer your question quite directly, which is, I think sometimes, a lot of times, the interpretation of the Gnostic myth is that there's a real us that comes with the Pleroma that's covered up from material from the Archons, right? Mm-hmm. And then, but in my reading of Secret John, and I'm not saying that's an invalid interpretation, but specifically the Secret Book of John, there's not a fully formed identity, right? There's just potential. There's energy that comes from Sophia and is then deposited into this reality and ends up in us, right? Right? Mm-hmm. And that's that, you know, that is not a fully formed soul or personality. So what we think of as us is a lot of it is archonic, right? A lot of it comes from the Archons. So, you know, if you're going to look at this movie, you know, if you want to have like a strong Gnostic interpretation, well, you know, actually the divine double is not a divine double, but it's actually the Archon, right? So as you're saying, Jason, the echo is actually better, right? Because, you know, we're in some ways we're echoes of the Archon, but because we have the divine spark, the potential that comes from Sophia, we are superior. So, you know, you could actually get a pretty, I'm not going to say sophisticated again, advanced Gnostic interpretation of this movie, where the clones are superior, the clones are better, and they're more pure than the Archons that they're cloned from.
Mm-hmm. There's also kind of if you sort of assume a Gnostic literary theory approach, like we on one hand we can like we're making the correlations in the story if it's a Gnostic metaphor, or we're suggesting a Gnostic metaphor even if one doesn't exist. But then there's also like the Gnostic literary theory of approaching it from if neither Echo or the Ewan McGregor's whatever the Tom. Jerk character is, Tom. Yeah. If neither Echo or Tom, if we're not seeing them as one as higher and one as lower, but both as essentially like examples of the kind of what you're talking about. Like Tom has been fully archonized, you know what I mean, by being enmeshed in our modern world, whereas good old Echo in his like in this like sort of infantilized world has been allowed to like remain less influenced by that, you know. So that's like, I don't think that's not a narrative that the movie is pushing, but I think there's like a Gnostic theory idea that you could carry there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the upbringing of the clones is really interesting to look at as well. So it's the first thing that we as an audience see, but we don't know what we're seeing yet. We're seeing this dream of Lincoln's. And so a lot of it is fragmented with these memories that Jason mentioned earlier that he's having that are actually Tom's memories that have seeped in somehow in his DNA or his programming. But a lot of what the fragmentation of the dream that we're seeing is actually what they show to all of the clones as they're being created. Like,
like shots of the island and...
Yeah, and like this, it is brainwashing, it's programming, neural programming that they're doing to these clones. but it very much is like, you are special. You have a purpose. You will be going to the island. Like, you have survived the contamination because you are meant to be here. And then it's all of these childhood memories that, like, every girl sees that. I mean, this is an incredibly binary movie. Like, yes. Every girl sees the same little girl on a bicycle, and every boy sees the same, like, t-ball game or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But there are, like, there's this neural programming that they are implementing onto these clones. And I think Sean Bean says it, again, quite openly to someone in the movie, that he knew that they needed to be infused with a purpose, that this idea of purpose needed to be part of the clones' education or upbringing or brainwashing, whatever you want to call it, this like island propaganda, because that would keep them striving for something while actually being very controlled and in prison. And so I think that's interesting from a Gnostic lens as well, of this, they're almost creating their own collective consciousness because these clones all have the same memories and the same knowledge of themselves and the way and the rules of the world. But it's actually not a collective consciousness. It's like very clearly been given to them. And so then when new memories and new streams of consciousness are reaching the clones through means that they, you know, the creators don't understand, I do think, not to use sophisticated again, but I do think there's an element of like real deep thought there that is in the script.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what part I really liked was when that thing went boom, like it blew up?
Sure.
Oh, that I really like that.
It was the most sophisticated explosion.
Yeah. Moving on, I do have a question for both of you. One other thing that's really funny about this movie, because it does take place in the future, as Bee's mentioned a few times, the advanced
our past,
future of 2019. But it is really funny because they have like these, like there's like hover, there is advanced technology. There's like hover cars and these hover bikes, but there's also just tons of obviously like gas burning vehicles, and they're just mixed in together. So it's just like obviously shot in 2005 with like some technology mashed in that doesn't make any sense if you think about it for 5 minutes. And that's also for budgetary reasons, and also the cars are product placements.
Can't forget that.
Like, I bet you this movie was probably cheaper than The Matrix to make.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know? Okay. So that actually, so I made some friends of mine watch this with me when I rewatched it. It was a great experience. We all just kept shouting out movies we thought this movie was trying to be like the whole time. But then because I have nerd friends, we all looked up trivia afterwards. And I gotta say, Michael Bay has said some wild things about this movie. So first of all, he absolutely was hoping that this movie would make a lot of money. I do think it was very expensive to make, and it didn't make a lot of money. It actually, out of his own mouth, was like the worst opening of any film that he's ever made, and it made the least amount of money, and he was very openly upset that it did not do as well financially as his other movies. And then he also had a lot of very weird things to say about Scarlett Johansson that, again, if you like read his direct quote, you're like, absolutely not. Did that, like, that never happened.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, she wouldn't come out of her trailer to film the sex scene in the movie because of something that he calls like a syndrome that women have about leaving their trailers. It is wild. It's wild. And then he says her issue with the sex scene was actually that her bra was too quote unquote ghetto, and she actually wanted to do the whole scene nude, which I'm sure an actress at that time was very excited to be nude for Michael Bay.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the budget is, I think it was something like $125 million in 2005 money, which is almost $200 million now. So it was, it had a huge budget.
It was
budget.
Very you expensive. Know,
and yeah. I just took a look, and The Matrix was $63 million. And this was 125. So I think there's 126. So that's interesting. Like, it's interesting that I thought it was cheaper.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe that's because of all the product placement and like...
And the things, you know, going boom.
The things going boom.
That but really also adds like, up.
But also like the lack of invention, in the, if that makes sense. Like the... in terms of the things that I was seeing, like the... It looked like they found sound stages they already had, you know, and buildings they already had and like cars they had on license kind of thing. Like, so, yeah, that's interesting that something was more expensive, but looked less.
Yeah. I have an, so, you know, I think we've got a pretty great podcast here, and with Talknosis, you know, we've been at it for 10 years, and, you know, in podcast terms, we don't get the hugest audience in the world, but we still get something about 3,000 per show, right? And of course, they live online, so they can keep going, and like, I don't know 3,000 people. I've rarely spoken to an audience of 3,000 people, so statistically, 3,000 people are listening and watching this, even though we told them to stop and watch the movie, you know, there's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are not going to watch the island. So, B and Jason, I have one question for you. What is the island?
Yeah, well, the island is the lie that they're told, you know, that so all of these, there's been this great contamination, and so now we humans have to live in this bunker, but the island is the one uncontaminated place left on Earth, and you win a lottery to be able to go to the island. So everybody is hopeful every night that they will win the lottery. But really, it's just that your human that you have been cloned after is ill or needs to cash in on your body. And so when you are chosen to go to the island, you die, actually. They perform surgery on you. They take the parts that they need. Someone has a baby, you know, as a surrogate in the movie. And that's actually the reveal of the first clone, is that this woman has a baby. And so she said that once the baby is born, they both can go to the island. And then the baby is taken and given to a woman who looks exactly the same as the woman who has just given birth. So yeah, the island is not real. Well, actually, Scarlett Johansson does think the island is real. She thinks it's the love that she has with Ewan McGregor. Yes. In that fabulous line, quote, "The island is real. It's us."
I lost it. I lost it at that moment. You know? Yeah, okay. Probably. But here's the thing. That line is so cheesy.
Yeah.
But I feel like there is kind of an element of truth there. That like, that the... So I'm going to go in a few different places here, but like on Gnostic, like, you know, subreddits and like lots of like physical and online conversations, there's often this, like, I find people will, especially when they early come to Gnosticism, they're looking for the new answer, if that makes sense. Like it appeals to them, but they want the new answer that now answers everything. This is why God is bad, or this is why bad things happen, or whatever. And this is what happens when we die. Like, this is it. Here's the new heaven that I now get to go to, or what have you. Clear answers. But I think like what Gnosticism is often trying to say is like, no, there is no easy answer here. There's no chance for you to now go to the right heaven. Heaven was inside you all along. You know what I mean? Like, the divine spark has been inside you the whole time. And so there is like, so again, I feel like as cheesy as that line is, there is also kind of that sense of like, yeah, you can't wait for someone else to give you your prize. You know, I don't know. Am I off base there?
Nope.
No, I don't think so at all, because I think you're right. And it's interesting too, that you're saying like, we're just looking for a recapitulation of the same story in something that makes a little bit more sense or resonates with our worldview a little bit, like when we're first getting into Gnosticism. And so I think it is interesting that we also are talking about this movie as a recapitulation of like so many ideas and amalgamations of stories that have come before. But I think that is, you know, the questioning nature of Lincoln and the idea that there wouldn't be this physical external paradise for them to go to, but that when they do come into the real world and they are able to actually lean into those feelings and like attractions that they are clearly having for each other, which we haven't talked about the proximity component, but like there are, you know, in the bunker, like the clones aren't allowed to be that close and everyone's kind of taken notice that these two are gravitating towards each other. So when they are able to lean into that, you know, in the real world together, then I do think that there is, yes, cheesy, but there is some poetry to the idea that they would even have the awareness that they don't need this external place if they are able to find this connection with each other. And I think I've said this on the on some episode before, but for me and my personal approach to spirituality, I always need it to have some practical application in the real world because that's all I can prove exists, or that's all I understand, right? I can only see what's right in front of me and interact with what's going on. And so at the end of the day, I am always open to that every story or every answer is just somebody's theory and we won't actually know. And so I think what you were saying, Jason, was a little bit like that. Like if we, if we can let go of these ideas of heaven or the island or paradise or whatever that is, and focus more in on what is here in front of us and how do we work with that? How do we sink into that? Yeah, I think there's something there.
Absolutely. It's I mean, you're both playing on my favorite theme, my favorite thing to rant about, which is, you know, a lot of modern interpretations of Gnosticism, and a lot of people who call themselves Gnostics or want to be Gnostic, and I suspect many of them are 15 years old and on Reddit, right? So I'm not, you know, I'm not saying I just don't want to come across as superior, which of course I never do, but I mean thinking that I'm superior. It's what I don't want to come across as, because everybody has wisdom and people are at different states. But to make a long story short, I really don't like the interpretation of Gnosticism that it's the body is bad. And if you do the following things and you get to go to super heaven when you die, right? I mean, the evangelicals say the same thing, right? The body is bad. And when you die, you get to go to super heaven if you do the right things. So I think what both of you are talking about is, you know, moving away from that narrative, interrogating that narrative, having different narratives. And I really appreciate that, even if you're not particularly talking about that formulation or that bugaboo of mine. So, yeah.
Well, but no, like 100%. I think the, to me, like one of the things that I define as important as a Gnostic is never being settled, you know, never having a single process by which you can like answer all Gnostic questions. But that is also kind of like, that can be terrifying, you know, to say to somebody like, no, it turns out there actually are like, there never was an answer or there never was an answer I can give you. And then you can stop looking, you know, it's only ever going to take more work. I think if anything, I think like the narrative we need is a narrative that continues to ask us to question narratives, you know, that doesn't just kind of try to map a new one on top.
It's funny that we've never talked about that. This is the most important thing for Gnosticism between the two of us, Jason, but we are completely simpatico, right? And, and you know, I think I've said that line, right? Gnosticism is just a narrative that questions all narratives, including its own narratives. It's a very ancient form of that. And it's a religion that's cynical and interrogative of religion. And, you know, again, going back to Secretion, as well as, you know, most all iterations of the Gnostic myth, all of this starts and there's a lot of bad results from God just trying to know itself, right? You know, God's wisdom, Sophia, tries to know itself, and then here we are, right? And there's flies eating children's eyeballs. So I think that this constant interrogation, this constant wanting to know and not being settled, that this is frequently difficult and unpleasant, and maybe there isn't a safe harbor. And I think the myth does kind of talk about that even when God tries to know itself, it can't be achieved, or it can't be achieved instantly. And a lot of stuff arises out of that is very unsettling. The unsettling thing being creation. I think too, never knowing that. And, you know, I can't prove this, but there's the heresiologists, there's debate if the Gnostics actually called themselves Gnostics, right? It's a dumb debate because the answer is yes, they did. But the heresiologists, the heresiologists, the people that didn't like them, that wrote about them, called them Gnostics as a joke, because they're like, these are the people who don't know. Like, they're being ironic. But I can't prove this, but it doesn't matter because modern interpretations are also valid. But I think there actually is something ironic with the Gnostics calling themselves Gnostic, because, you know, they were big fans of Plato, they're big fans of Socrates, and Socrates was the wisest man because he said, I know that I don't know. And the Gnostics, I think that their knowing was an unknowing. And, you know, we kind of find this in some of the texts where you have what they call negative theology. And we're not calling it negative theology because sometimes their theology is a bit of a downer. But because you can only know, God can't be described by words. So you say things like, God is a being, but God is not a being. Right, the one, I should be saying in terms. So you talk about what the one, the monad, or God isn't, and that's a kind of unknowing put into words. So I often think that the wisdom of the Gnostics is the knowledge of unknowing. I think there might actually be a little bit of irony there. So I'm just rambling. I'm not really talking about the island anymore. But I think this unknowing is and this challenge to narratives is very important. Yeah. So my rant's over.
I've got a whole bunch of ideas that came out of that, but one thing that I did want to mention, going back to B, your question about, your note, like, so at the end of the clones are just free, what's going on there? But again, maybe one thing that is kind of, again, connected to this like positive interpretation, or like this, a positive telling of, what would be a good Gnostic impulse, which is to be able to freely explore meaning. You know, that they get to kind of get dropped into the modern world, but not have been formed by it, you know? So there is kind of an interesting, like, the Gnostic rebirth is that, like, you get to break out of this, like, prison world that seemed like heaven, but was just using you, and you break out to a worse world, but that you get to define, you know? Versus one that's either being handed to you or that has corrupted you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
Well, and also the boat. So the boat is, right, the boat shows up in the very first dream that we see. Lincoln is dreaming of this boat, and he knows the name of this boat, and it's this Latin word, and it's the first thing that pings Sean Bean as, like, there's a problem here with Lincoln. He's not supposed to know this boat. And we realize later it's because the boat has been designed by Tom, the man, the human man that Ewan McGregor plays, mm-hmm. both him and the clone. Oh, my dog is very upset that we're not done yet. and he's like, too much of the island, please.
We're going to go with the full 2 hours and 16 minutes, the length of the island.
Yes, buckle up, Gus. It's going to be a long ride.
Wait for the live stream.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'll be shorter because I will have edited the action sequences.
That's right.
Yeah. So this boat, it turns out that it's been designed by Ewan McGregor's human version. And actually the name of it is Latin for rebirth. So I actually, yes. And they say that in the movie, yes. And so I wrote it down. I felt so silly taking notes on this, but I was like, there is a cool metaphor going on here of, like, this boat being both a rebirth and a vessel, and like an opportunity, like a vehicle to his new life, because the end of the movie is that both Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor's clones have conveniently died over the course of the movie. And so it is not said whether, like, ScarJo doesn't really take the place of her clone, but Ewan McGregor absolutely takes over the place of his human. So there's this whole switcheroo in the movie where the two of them get caught together, and their pursuer can't figure out which one is the clone and which one is Ewan McGregor for real. And so Lincoln makes this really smart last minute decision to put his clone bracelet onto the human, and the human is killed. And so then he takes over as Tom. So I do think there is this, there is some depth to this movie, just in that I have to say some thought went into this, and I will give it that, because the boat being actually named Rebirth and being this through line, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some depth there.
You know, like, I have no idea if this would ever happen, but like, just in case the filmmakers, like the screenwriters, would ever be watching or listening to this, I also want to say too, like, I get how note sessions work. I get how the machinery of filmmaking, and how like a lot of our teasing of this movie and our sort of diminutions of the plot and the development of it, like, I get how those choices were made. You know, I get how the sandwich was made. And this is also like, this is a very mid-90s to mid-2000s kind of film as well. Like, there was a formula. There was a formula about how to shoot things and how to write things. And like, if you wanted the movie made, you had to do those things too. So I feel like it's worth just giving the writers some credit that they probably didn't blunder into some of this stuff, that they were probably trying to filter, like, get it through the filter of the filmmaking. There was a what was I gonna say there? I'm just looking at some of my other notes. Like, I think just a couple of, like, going back to the dopamine thing, connections that I thought that I was like, oh, that's interesting. I think it's interesting that the lottery that sends people to the island, people follow the rules of it, but they also kind of already think that the game might be fixed. That's interesting. So even within the bunker, it's not like everyone's not completely idyllic and innocent. One of them thinks he might have figured out the system, and I'm like, that guy's doing gematria. Like,
I literally wrote down, I was like, this is numerology. Like, this is so esoteric. Like, there's a whole cipher system. He thinks he's figured out numbers equals letters equals whatever. I'm like, yeah.
And talking about clones, I was watching this movie, and, you know, I said to my wife, and it's like, oh, you know, I always love it when Wallace Shawn pops up in a movie, and she's like, that's not Wallace Shawn. So there's a Wallace Shawn-esque actor in this movie who's perhaps a clone. So.
Of Wallace Shawn. It's Wallace Shawn's clone starring in The Island. I'm just kidding.
So we actually are, I know that, you know, we are coming up on an hour, so, you know, we have to talk about, cram in all the really important stuff that we didn't talk about, right? As we're going through our extensive notes, which means that, you know, I very quickly have to talk about Ewan McGregor's frosted tips, which is the clone has the frosted tips.
Yes.
It's my ear. So it's a post-apocalyptic world, and again, we keep talking about this being a 2005 movie, but Scarlett Johansson has like these horrible layers. She kind of looks like Christina Aguilera at the time. Her brows, it's a real trip, folks.
So, oh, so you see thing. Horrible, but I thought she looked banging. I was like, this movie is a mid-2000s bisexual dreamscape. I mean, come on.
I'm so glad the frosted tips, actually, that came up. My partner and I were watching it, and she was like, why do the clones have frosted tips? Who is frosting the tips of the clones? Why would the clones want their tips frosted? But here's my Gnostic interpretation. It is because as they're more innocent, they are closer to their divine spark, and that energy is what, like, it's completely natural. There's no dye jobs happening in the, you know, in the salons of the bunker. This is like their innocence.
Their enlightenment
is frosting.
Like, exactly. Literal. Yeah. I could get behind that theory.
Yeah. I'm gonna go get some frosted tips tomorrow.
I think it would really help us all.
Yeah, we'll all get frosted tips. You know, sometimes people all get tattoos together, but we'll do. Yeah, we'll do frosted tips.
Incredible. Yeah. That's the official uniform of Popnosis, the frosted tips.
Yeah. Oh, actually, Jason, you get the frosted tips. I'll grow up my hair and get the ScarJo layers.
The layers.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We did look this up after. This was Scarlett Johansson's first action role. So really? I do think that Michael Bay could take some credit for Black Widow, for her Marvel career, if he wanted to. Because I think this was
a real precursor.
I'm very sure. She was like, she just wanted to be naked for me. And also, I made her Black Widow. So you're welcome.
What are some other notes that we wanted to make here before we go? I think, like, I remember I took a note here about that heaven gives them meaning, which I think, like, just going back to that notion of how, like, in the bunker, there's a clear narrative about like how things work, which I think we already alluded to, but I just wanted to like point that out again. And then there is also like, we haven't talked about the mercenary too much. There's this like hunter mercenary guy. And I was like, mythologically, where does he sit? Like, he's kind of this grim reaper figure, like maybe like a, like an archangel of death, but like not an archangel of death in a, like he's not punishing because he's got his own moral questions about what's going on, you know, like he's kind of not sure what he should be doing. So yeah, like he sort of struck me as an interesting position inside this overall narrative.
And well, he flips sides. There is, in some of the Gnostic mythologies, there's one of the archons, Sabaoth, he changes sides. So he comes onto our side. So that's definitely what the authors of this screenplay were thinking of.
That definitely.
Character. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
No, but he is interesting because he abstains essentially for most of the movie from having an ethical viewpoint. And it's only through seeing more of the facility and actually interacting with the clones that he is like, oh, actually, I might be, you know, helping out the wrong side. But I do think his position is very interesting in it because he's originally called, Sean Bean calls him specifically because the clone company, has government contracts, and they say that even the president of the United States has a clone in the bunker. And so he doesn't want the government to know that the clones are sentient human beings either. So he calls in this third party whose only allegiance is to keeping the confidence of his clients. And so I do think there's a real, like, he's an interesting character because he serves his own interests. Sure, he's like, you know, self-employed instead of working for a corporation or the government. But at the same time, he really does kind of pledge his allegiance to whoever is hiring him at the time. And then you watch him grapple with his own understanding of ethics as well.
Totally. Totally. Anything that you've got on that, John? And like, I guess you already mentioned that. What's his name? Sabaoth?
Yeah, Sabaoth or Sabaoth. Yeah. And sometimes, I think sometimes Abraxas is that figure as well. And arguably Judas in the Gospel of Judas. You can say that all those are people who are archons flip sides. So. So that's definitely the correct interpretation of that.
Definitely correct. One really just quick thing, again, this is very much like a Matrix connection, but I think it's interesting that Echo discovers the outside world or like cracks through by following a bug. He follows the butterfly, I think it is. So again, there's sort of an interesting thing of like both the natural world, but also like a non-mammalian, like an insectoid thing that, you know, kind of helps drag him out was interesting to me. And then I like, this might be the last note that I've got or the last question that I've got, but like, I think it was interesting about these, like, was there something there about the organs? Like, the reason that they couldn't just clone a brainless body is because the organs needed to be inside like a living person. And so the note I took is like, oh, so the organ needs a soul to operate, you know, like. And I don't know if there's a Gnostic interpretation there, but it was sort of like the implied, you know, like they never gave a scientific explanation. It was one of those things where like, we don't know why the brain, Jonathan just disappeared. Oh, maybe his,
he's out.
His clone just knocked on the door. The story never says, it's for this scientific reason that the organ can't work. The story just says, no, for some reason it needs to be in a living body. But then I'm like, but there's also like the living body has a soul, or at the very least an individual personality.
Well, and a wisdom too. I think there's an intelligence to the body that is divine. And so that is why I can't get behind some of the more cynical, you know, down with matter Gnostic theory. as well, because there's so much that happens within us all of the time that we have no conscious control over or knowledge of, like all of the body systems that are functioning always without us doing anything. So I do think that was one of the, you know, the movie didn't attempt to really answer no. that.
Yeah,
nor did it answer, do they just take out one organ and then they're done?
I was wondering that. Yeah. It's like, do they just put the rest in the garbage or what are we
yeah,
doing here?
Yeah, because they can't go back into Gen Pop because they've gone to the island. So yeah. There can't be a new one made. So I do have some questions about, like, you've yeah. grown this whole person. So I guess like whichever organ goes first, you get one shot.
Well,
and clone.
Well, I think they've numbered like the numbers of the clones, like there's probably a lot of Toms, you know what I mean? There's a lot yeah. of Tom clones. Not Tom Jones, Tom clones. but
the Tom Jones cover band. Tom clones.
Oh my God. It's probably like there might be other Toms in Gen Pop, you know, on different levels. Maybe they like keep them separate or something, like, or yeah. maybe they like the movie never addresses it, but I like that was kind of all my sort of personal thing. But like, is there a connection that we can make, you know, again, not that the movie is saying, but that is that could be interesting, you know, about that notion of like, I think you kind of touched on it there, B, I think about the notion that the body does need the mind, you know, like that, you know, like if, or John, you were saying like, if like we're here or if like reality exists because God needed to experience itself, like, then that's not a inherently bad thing, you know? And so experiencing the body, experiencing like, that's why we can't just be a brain in a jar or a brain in a jar connected to various organs that are just doing separate things. It has to be connected. It has to be integrated and processing. I'm kind of brainstorming this as I talk about it.
Yeah, no, I wonder if there's something here about something being like a whole instead of individual parts, you know, like the body as a whole functioning system instead of kind of piecemealed. I mean, you could get back to collectivism versus individualism here if you really wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, totally. There's, I mean, like, there's also kind of a, Ellen Moore has talked about this idea that our culture has gone through a whole lot of, through its, a lot of its scientific progress has separated a lot of things. So it's gone through the alchemical, like, solve et coagula. It's gone through a lot of solve. Separating, defining. But that what is necessary is also then a coagula, putting it all back together. And so, like, yeah, again, I don't think the movie is saying that.
but
I think it's an interesting idea about, like, where would the value come from that would make it an automatic yes in the movie that organs need bodies, or sorry, organs need people, you know? They can't just be grown by themselves.
And of course, you know, the real reason for that is it's just a plot hole that they just had to wave their hand at, or there
exactly.
be a movie. Everybody exactly. watching it is like, well, why don't they just grow the organs? The Matrix, Matrix does the same thing, because it's like they just hand wave because it's they say that, oh, you know, we had to plug you into the Matrix. You had to have lives. We couldn't just like grow you as bodies, right? And then there's no mm-hmm. explanation ever why. So so that's the real reason. However, I'm glad that it has started a great inquiry of philosophical deepness. And of course, we don't know, like the folks were recording this in 2023, the world might still be mostly wiped out at any moment. There could be a post-apocalyptic scenario, and maybe the only thing that will survive from the 20th and 21st centuries is a copy of The Island, and people will be like, okay, well, what's this, you know, this our holy work, you know, there is this reference to how the bodies, you know, they need to be ensouled, like, and then you know, people will write grand treatises, and there will be schisms about that, and huge debates, and that's what will form the next society, will be
guys,
the discussions on that one line.
Somebody's gonna find on a USB stick like this episode, like centuries after The Island becomes that core text, and we're going to start a whole new like schism.
I was going to say, if this episode isn't a part of this future theology, I'm going to be very upset. What about my legacy? Yeah,
it'll be found in an Egyptian desert.
So
in a pot.
And the followers, you'll always be able to identify the followers of this schism by their frosted tips.
Yes.
Perfect. We've done it. We've done it. Well... This is a wrap.
we can't top that. One thing I would like to say to anybody listening is, I think we've thrown out a lot of cool ideas here. But if you have ideas that we didn't cover, then like pop them in the comments. Offer other opinions, disagree with us on any of this stuff. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, and welcome. What I meant to say was come and join us for our next show on The Rock. which I think you can get a Gnostic. Okay, so Nick Cage is Jesus, right? Gnostic Jesus. He's breaking into the prison, right?
Save it for the show.
Yeah.
Save it for the show.
Don't give all your best stuff away now.
I think that might actually have to happen. Any closing thoughts beyond the frosted tips? Oh, sorry. I have a few more admin stuff, but anyone else have any last thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I have one last thought about the actual movie. So I thought it was really interesting. The bunker life is not that different from any kind of dogmatic society or even, I'm sure, some Gnostic societies. And obviously, this is very cultish as well, which some of these early communities like the Pythagoreans, we can't say that wasn't a cult. We just don't really view it on the, through that lens. But this like full control of diet, of exercise, of mood, of proximity to others, of relationship, of knowledge, this kind of full control from kind of up above, or this code of conduct that everyone, in a society, we would hope everyone would be agreeing to that and coming to that decision of their own accord. But I thought it was really interesting, kind of this parallel between some of these like early religious or philosophical communities and kind of how they were being held and what standards they were being held to, like in the bunker.
Totally. Yeah, that is interesting. There's also, John, do you have any last thoughts? But I'll comment on what you just said there, B.
Well, after watching the movie, I really want to get some Aquafina bottled water. I really want to buy some Puma shoes. I need a Mercedes. Trying to think, I don't know why, but this is the thoughts that are running through my head after watching this.
MSN, you want to?
Yes, that's right.
Subscription to MSN, yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of touched on it earlier, B, just with your last comment touched on something even earlier about a notion of like individualization versus collectivization, and like the challenges of forming communities that are not dogmatic is also like a whole thing. But there is, I think there is something interesting about how the movie is like sort of generally critical of any sort of top-down control. That is, they're any dogmatic, obvious control. They're less, the movie has less of a problem with the more subtle controls of branding, advertising,
like, right. The movie itself is an influencer. However, it would tell you it would not like an influencer.
Yeah. You know what absolutely everybody is doing? Being an individual. That's this podcast is not sponsored by Michelob, but it does have Patreon supporters. And if you wanted to be one of those, we'd love to have you. Patreon.com/Gnostic. And
you hypothetically get early access to the shows, which will happen again soon. Exactly. And you hypothetically get an invite to our Discord, which is hopping. But there are going to be things coming for, I say this all the time for years. Thanks for everybody who gives us money, by the way, to keep the show going out of the goodness of your hearts. But someday we're going to give you some kind of reward. We're working on it.
And honestly, also too, helping support the show is at the very least help makes the show happen, and the more supporters we get, probably the faster it'll happen. So that's another offer as well. But
patreon.com/Gnostic. sorry.
Yeah. Also, I want to be on the Discord.
Okay, yeah, no, it's hopping. So we will get you on there.
It is hopping. Great. But we've got some plans. We've got some ideas. I think then that's it for me. Thanks very much for all of you for tuning in, for John and B for going to the island with me.
Oh, wow. Well, the island was us.
Yeah,
The real island was us. And our frosted tips. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.